The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 436, recorded on August 31st, 2016. Sixth edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 269th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durr.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, you may not be able to notice this, but we're recording on a new day of the week, on Wednesdays, because everything good happens after Tuesday, partly because of video game releases, and you know, it's further away from the weekend, so you don't have, you know, on Mondays the news is a little bit slower of a trickle. So, TJ, you're in Los Angeles.
I am.
Explain.
Why are you there?
Yeah, I was going to say, explain to the people why you're in Los Angeles.
The Call of Duty XP fan event is this weekend. They're doing the World Championships for Black Ops 3.
Yeah.
And they're showcasing some gameplay for the upcoming Infinite Warfare, the zombie mode, and the remastered Call of Duty 4.
You know what's funny is that they did have a Call of Duty convention a couple of years ago, and it was a big hit, but then they dropped it for whatever reason. Maybe it was logistics, but now that they have the impetus, Activision has the impetus to get their new acquisition of a esports MLG gaming off the ground, they probably brought the thing back. And I'm glad because, you know, you have the same old, you know, the QuakeCon and BlizzCon and stuff like that. It's nice to have a COD con, even if I don't play COD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like they have a lot of stuff here, and it's going to be pretty fun. They have a whole ton of things lined up for the weekend.
Yeah, well, for me, for the weekend, it's going to be Star Trek Con, because the Star Trek convention's in New York this weekend. It's the first time I've ever going to a Star Trek convention.
That is really cool. I'm jealous.
So, yeah, I'm not a mundane, but I'm also not someone who's going to go cosplay. So one of the fun things I'm going to be doing is looking at all the cosplay and seeing who had themselves surgically altered to resemble a Klingon. So,
that would be pretty extreme.
Yeah, I saw someone who did that, but I never saw him in a Star Trek convention. So he had the forehead ridges, but it had nothing to do with the Star Trek convention. Anyway, so yeah, it'll be my first Star Trek convention. I don't know who's. I mean, all the major people are going to be there, I guess. And thing is that, you know, I haven't really heard of many Star Trek conventions in New York lately. You know, usually it's in a warm weather city like Los Angeles or San Diego or Texas or something like that. You know, that might be actually a good question of the week. What con do you go to? You know, what's your favorite con? Is it PAX? Is it Gen Con? Is it the Star Trek convention? Or
I think mine would be Dragon Con.
That's a good one. It's the Gen Con after Gen Con.
Yeah, it's in Atlanta, and I just like the name Dragon Con,
yeah.
But people dress up as, you know, whatever they want, and I actually have a few friends that live in that area and go there and, you know, dress up, and it's really cool to see the outfits.
Dragon Con going on this weekend, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have Dragon Con, we have COD Con, we have Star Trek Con, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I've never gone to Dragon Con, but, you know, somehow all those T-shirts seem to go all over the United States. Because you'll always see someone wearing a Dragon Con 87 T-shirt or something like that. You know?
It's a popular convention, I think.
Yeah. How about you, TJ?
For conventions?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, not industry events, so you can't say CES or E3.
Yeah, it's not, like, for fan conventions, I don't really do much in the way of fan conventions.
Really? You never go to PAX or anything?
I'm probably going to hit PAX South this coming year.
Okay.
Are
you going to hit PAX South too, Scott?
I actually went to, a few years ago, I went to Dark Shadows Convention, and they celebrate the old 1960s Dark Shadows. They have the old original cast there. And they
I know, because a close friend of mine is he's a celebrity impersonator. He does Austin Powers, and he's heavily invested in Dark Shadows. And when there's a wherever the convention is, he goes.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it alternates between New York and California every year.
But the question I asked you, Scott, was do you go to PAX? Have you ever gone to PAX?
No, I've never gone to PAX.
Oh, okay. So, TJ, continue your story.
Oh, I was going to say, I went to SGC last year, Screwtech Gaming Convention. That was it was okay. It was an experience.
I always hear I should go SXSW? SXSW, right.
Oh, South by Southwest in Austin.
Yeah, I've never gone there, although everybody says I should go.
It's interesting. Lots of good music, lots of good people there, but it gets crazy. Austin is crazy. There was a car that went through a roadblock, I think. It was either last year or the year before last. Okay. And that was a thing.
That's crazy. I mean, why were they driving through a roadblock?
Because they were drunk and idiotic and shouldn't have been.
You know, I always think of Texas. If I meet someone, I automatically assume they're drunk. Even the kids. Anyway, I'll apologize to Texas for that one.
You don't have to. It's mostly true.
Anyway, so what games have you been playing, Scott?
Well, that's interesting how you're saying about the releases come after Wednesdays, and not only did Abduction come out, which was a Kickstarter game, but the last Fallout 4 DLC, Nuka World, also came out, and I've been playing both of those. Now, the Abduction, I feel like they hit it right on the target when they were trying to make a new Myst game, and it really feels like that because you're this person that's kidnapped, and by the way, you can pick male or female if you want,
right.
For your character, and you get kidnapped from Earth, and apparently a lot of other people have been taken as well, and from different periods of time, and you're brought to this place that has like little bits of your home sitting there, so you'll see some houses and whatnot, and you go walking around, and it's pretty deserted at first, and it looks like, you know, some big thing has happened because you can't find anyone, but there's these little machines that have a mayor that pops up and tells you about the area, where to go, what's of importance, and then eventually you find this vault door where this guy has himself locked behind, and here's where it feels missed to me, is where he's saying he wants to go home, and if you help him, he'll, you know, bring you home too, which is a lot like the very first game where Artis, I think it was, or I can't remember the guy's name now, wants to, you know, get free, but, you know, he's missing a page of his book, and you have to go find it and bring it to him and ignore the two bad brothers' books. But with the Abduction, you're exploring the world, you're manipulating things, seeing what they do, and it feels very Myst-like. And with the Nuka World downloadable content, you get a radio station to lure you to this bandit's hideout. And it's a little bit like the Far Harbor, where the radio, they use the radio stations to open up these places for you as a tie-in. I think that's really handy for their setup. And so you get there, and these bandits have like this gauntlet set up that you have to get through to get to the end. And then you have this boss battle, and then you become like the overboss of the place. And from there, you get to decide whether you want to continue the Raiders' way of life, or you can kill all the Raiders, which I haven't yet done yet, but I will.
Now, this came out when? Yesterday?
Yeah.
And you did all this in one day. Wow. Okay.
It's only a few minutes worth. But, you know, it was... I just did the gauntlet part for the Nuka Cold World. There's a whole entire place to explore that I was just playing a few minutes ago, in fact, and I just stopped and got off to get on the call with you guys.
Right. So how about you, TJ?
For the first one, I was playing The Final Station, and it's an indie game from Tiny Build and Do My Best Games. Survival horror. You're a train conductor in a world that is pretty much falling apart. These capsules basically landed on the planet and made people start oozing black goo out of every orifice and turning into ravenous monsters. And in this broken world, you're a train conductor that runs between human sanctuaries, like doing, looking after survivors, getting people where they need to go. And it's a pixelated game, like a 2D, pixelated side scroller type thing, where you get weapons, you find ammo, you find supplies wherever you can, and it's interesting. The way it works is that you run your train to a place, and in order to leave that place, you have to collect a code that will let your train unblock, disconnect from a blocker. And so when you enter a place, everything that you haven't explored, like behind a closed door, is blocked off, and you can't see inside there until you open the door.
Right.
And it sets up like this real tension. For like a 2D side scroller, where like you don't know what's gonna be behind that door. It could be like a little bit of supplies, or it could be like 15 terrible monsters looking to maul you. And and then when you're not doing that, like you can find people in the world that'll give you context and tell you what's going on, or you can collect them and bring them aboard your train and escort them out. And once you're back on your train, it is basically this simulation survival type thing where you use your supplies to keep the maintenance of the train going and look after your survivors. They each have a health and a food bar. The food bar drops constantly. The health will only drop if they've been wounded. Like, you'll find some people that have been
attacked.
Oh,
wait a minute. I played this at E3. Yeah, I did play this at E3, right, and you try to keep this train going and going and going, right, and sometimes you have to get out, and I played this at E3,
it's really fun.
It's very similar to another game, I don't know if you played it, I forgot the name of it, but in which you're in this giant train, but it doesn't move until you either open this wind sails to make it move, or you have to feed coal or something like that, and you constantly have to stop. But yeah, now here's the thing: is that Tiny Build is the publisher; it's not the developer. The developers do my best games,
right?
And you know what? When you talk about Tiny Build, I keep on thinking about Punch Club and how much I want to play that at some point. You know, do you remember Punch Club? That's the RPG. That's the RPG boxing game.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I got to try that at some point. But yeah, I remember The Final Station. And actually, you know, it has some really good parallax. You know, there's one part in which you're going by what looks like a city in the background, and you see the city lights, and they're all moving at different speeds.
It's got a lot of different vibes to it. Like, the whole capsule thing reminds me of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and, like, there's Snowpiercer, all sorts of other
game
stuff going on in there that is just... It's interesting.
Maybe a little bit of Snowpiercer of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's available on Steam now for $15.
Yes. And it's worth it, I would say. I think it's worth it. Other than that, I got back into... I haven't played it in a while, since February, actually, but...
Uh-oh.
I got back into League of Legends.
Oh. And here's the thing. Jordan, he used to be a co-host. His son, Alan, boycotted League of Legends and didn't play it anymore because they started screwing him over. I forgot the exact details, but a lot of people were pissed off at them, so they stopped playing. Were you one of those people, or...?
No, I just stopped playing because the community is so toxic that I couldn't deal with it anymore.
Well, here's a question. Which is more toxic? Which has a more toxic community, League of Legends or Dota?
I have never played Dota, but from what I understand, it's sort of on the same tier. They have such a steep learning curve, and everyone that's playing the game expects you to know exactly what you're doing at all time, and if you don't, they'll tell you about it a lot.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of online multiplayer games. Like,
well, no. See, here's the thing. A lot of shooters are the same. You know, you point, you shoot. you know, it's very hard to screw that up. Dota and League of Legends have a quadrillion classes, and each of them do a different thing. Oh, you're going to be support? Well, you better help me when I'm doing this. Oh, you fucker. How could you not do that? You're an asshole because...
Yeah, that sounds exactly like World of Warcraft.
Okay, well, here's the thing. World of Warcraft, though, at least has the four general things. Healer, tank, scrapper, and missile.
Yeah, and you're treated like a little bitch if you don't do what they want you to do.
Okay, well, here's the thing.
I played it.
Multiply that
toxic community.
Multiply that by 30. and you have MOBAs.
And I'm glad I never wasted a moment's time on that game. Thank you for the warning.
See, I will say the difference between World of Warcraft and League of Legends is that League of Legends has to be a team-based thing. There is no way to play it solo. There's no way to not deal with other people in that game. Mm. The single-player element is for training only, if not non-existent. Yeah. So you have to be in games with these other people that are just like, they're either the worst and trying to screw you over, or they assume that you're trying to screw them over because you're not perfect. And
yeah, and the thing about World of Warcraft is at least you know what you did wrong. I mean, in League of Legends, it's a little more arcane what you quote-unquote did wrong, because anything that you're quote-unquote doing wrong is strategy-based. It's not, oh, you didn't heal me at the right time. It's more like, you should have been here doing this and this and this. It isn't like, oh, you didn't heal me. What's it called? What the hell? No, it's more like, you weren't at the specified location doing this specified thing to help us do this specified thing, which isn't exactly the most user, isn't the most intuitive thing to know.
Because there's fun, right?
There's strategy. I mean, if you do World of Warcraft, you know you screwed up as a healer if the person you're healing didn't heal. I mean, you know. And usually it isn't your fault. It's more like the fault of your build. You know, it's like they asked you to heal. You weren't heal spec'd, so that sort of thing.
There's a lot of things to consider when you're doing League of Legends. And, I mean, from a person that I've gone through, like, I at my best, I was up in Gold 4 tier, which is above average, but, like, not, like, awesome. Mm-hmm. I have fun with it because, yes, there are people that are awful, but when you figure it out and you know the strategies and you know what you're doing, it's cool when you see it all come together properly, and it's cool when you get people that aren't shit-eating assholes.
Yeah, TJ just admitted he's awful, so watch out, people.
I will not feed. If I have my role, then I will not feed.
Okay. Anyway, as for me, I started playing Deus Ex Mankind Divided, but I had to abandon it. Why? Because even on the lowest visual settings, the frame rate was at like 5 or 10, which is astoundingly bad because my computer can run other stuff. I upgraded my graphic drivers and all that, and you know what? I'm just going to leave that game alone. And here's the thing. I did see it with all the ultra, because what's funny is I started with all the ultra graphics up. You know, for some reason, it doesn't detect what your computer can do, and man, it looks gorgeous. But even on the lowest settings, it's a slog, so I'm putting that one away for a while. Mm-hmm. Now, here's one of the funny things about Early Access. I did not know that Master of Orion was released on August 24th because I've had it on Steam for the past couple of months. So it's sort of like, oh wait, Master of Orion has been released? Okay. And so I've been playing a little bit of that. But the funny thing is, it's not much different from what I was playing before, except for a few things. I will say this for those of you who are interested: it's a lot like Master of Orion 2. Not the first Master Orion, but Master Orion 2. It also has a lot of famous actors, not the least of which is Michael Dorn doing all of the narration duties. So, and he sounds like Worf, but that's his job. He doesn't sound like I Am Weasel, he sounds like Worf. and I did not know that I was playing with a pre-order DLC faction, which is the Terran faction, which you have the human faction, the good guys, and the Terran faction, the bad guys. So you have good humans and bad humans. And there are other famous actors doing the voices for the other alien races. And I have to say this, you have to be careful with this game in that it's militaristic. And that, yeah, it's a 4X game, and yeah, it's a lot like Civilization, but you know, you better get your ships out there, because even your allies will say, ooh, oh, look at your tiny little army. I'm going to go and take your planet. Thank you. I don't care if you declare war on me. Thank you, because you have a shitty army. So you got to make sure that you have an armed forces. It's not like Civilization V, in which I can turtle myself to a certain extent, you know, just have a good enough army that prevents, you know, people from wanting to invade. No, these guys will say, oh yeah, it's time to eat you alive. Thank you. You know, because it's very easy to forget to build your ships. You know, I like the variety of planets just as it is. And I just wish, see, when you land on a swamp planet, you land on a swamp planet. The planet looks like a swamp planet. I just want more versions of that swamp planet, so it doesn't look like the same swamp planet over and over and over again.
I think that's the problem, that it's a swamp planet. It needs to be a diverse planet with multiple biomes to be...
Well, it does. I mean, but it's still rewarding. Like I said, if you loved Master of Orion 2, this is an upgraded Master of Orion 2. I haven't tried customizing a race yet. Like you can do that, just like you did in Master of Orion 2. I haven't done it yet, but I will. But you know, it's a solid game. It's a solid 4X space game. And if you like Civilization and you like, it's not like the other 4X space games out there, like Galactic Civilizations, which is more scripted. Then you have Endless Empire. No, is it Endless Empire? Endless Space, which is more of a exploration game. While there's a lot of exploration in Master of Orion 2, at its heart, it's a, you better have a big army because everyone's out to get you. Build those military stations, you know, and build those, you know, those space stations outside your planets, you know, to make sure that you can, you know, because they'll help slow down those forces.
That kind of makes me think of Stellaris.
It could be a little bit. I haven't played Stellaris as much. But if you played Master of Orion 2, this is Master of Orion 2. That's basically it. With better graphics, better every, you know, which is good. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, because Master of Orion came out in, what, 1990s? Master of Orion 2 came out in 1996, I think? So, yeah, it's 20 years later. Oh, wow, 20 years. Jesus Christ. Wow, I just dated myself badly. It's been 20 years since, Quake and Doom and Duke Nukem Forever and Quake came out in 96. That's 20 years ago. Jesus.
Yeah, that is scary. Yeah. When I graduated high school was 20 years ago.
Yeah. anyways, if you enjoy that sort of game, try it. I'm also still playing a bit of the poker game, the free-to-play poker game from 505 Games. The thing is, I'm learning something quickly, is that if you see someone with a large stack, leave the table, because they will do things that would normally get them either hospitalized or murdered if they tried it in real life. I'm telling you this right now. People will murder you if you do the things that they try and do in prominence poker. So I usually go to the step below. Normally I'm eligible, normally suggest the 10,000 buy-in. I go to the 5,000 buy-in just because it's a little less hectic. So I'm still doing that. There is some progression. It's a lot slower now that they take away the bonuses. It used to be 100% bonus plus whatever modifier you have on. Now it's just the modifier. And I think that was just to get people up to speed quicker on... You know, just to get them higher level at the beginning of the game, and then they could afford to slow it down a bit after the game has been out for like 2 or 3 weeks.
So, is this a game that uses real money, or is this just...
No, it uses chips, but you can buy chips with real money. Okay. It's free to play. That's the microtransaction. It is buy chips, and that's about it. I bought chips twice when the mid-tier, which is normally $5 to get 60,000 chips plus 15,000 chips, was 99 cents. I did that twice when it was 99 cents when the game was first launched, and I haven't bought any chips since. It also gives you chips at the beginning of each thing, and you get a streak bonus if you log in every day. It's not much, but it's something. And the chips you use to buy stuff, you know, to buy purely cosmetic stuff. Like, I used it to buy a nice brown suit, and a brown derby and blue sunglasses and some earrings and some rings. So at least I look decent when I'm at the poker table, you know. And since
all blinged up.
Yeah, and since I did some of the single player stuff, and there is single player stuff, you can get an affiliation after you reach level 10 or something like that. And I decided to be affiliation with the Hearts. There are 4 suits. Only 2 suits are available right now. And with that, I actually got a free cigarette, which is a boost. So, and there is a single player mode if you just want to play poker against AI, but I seldom ever do that. Because the AI is stupid, and you don't get many chips that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're conservative at the poker table, you know, if you know when to just pass, aim until you get a really good hand, then you can clean up. It, like I said the last time I talked about this game, it's more of a Zen-like experience. It's sort of like you zone out playing it, you know, because it's so quiet and so understated, and yet there's enough animations, and there are animations that you can do at the table, like flip a chip, or do a magic trick, or slit and do the throat slash motion at people, that it keeps you invested, you know. So it has that nice little. I just have to be careful about who I'm playing against, because if I detect someone's going to be a prick, then I'm not gonna stay at that table.
That's what I was gonna say. Is they really ought to introduce an update where you can, if it's just virtual currency. They really ought to introduce an update where you can follow someone after the table and stab them for their chips.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Like I said, you know, there's something about, the other day I got my first 4 of a kind, which was sweet, and it was 4 aces, no less.
Nice.
I had a 7 card stud. I had 2 aces showing, and 2 aces came out, and poor guy thought he had something with a 3 of a kind, but sorry, nothing beats 4 of a kind except straight flush. And you didn't have a straight flush. So I beat you. I beat you, sorry. There was one in which I'm pretty sure... I you can't see them if they do that, but I'm pretty sure he threw his controller at the television screen, in which we had a huge pot, and we had both gone all in. And my hand was a pair of kings, and his hand was a pair of queens. I'm pretty sure that he must have thrown his controller at the screen at that one. No one's punked me like that in this game yet. So at least there's that. Anyways, we're gonna move on to game news. And the first game news is such: people buy PS4 Slim consoles before it's announced. And this comes from some Business Insider. PlayStation 4 Slims have started popping up for sale, and Sony hasn't officially announced it, nor has the company even responded to the request for comment. But it's very much real and expected to get an official debut on September 7th. Sony's holding a PlayStation meeting press event on that date, which I know because a few of the people I know are going to be attending it. It's here in New York. So how do we know it's real? A few days after this one popped up from a Twitter user named Shortman82, Eurogamer went to his house and filmed it in operation. The European gaming publication and Richard Ledbetter, the song's longtime hardware guru, the video was taken down by Eurogamer the same day that it went up. According to the update, they said, upon taking legal advice, we have removed the video previously referenced in this article, which is very strange because this has happened before. Even if an article is wrong, usually leave the article up and just write the corrections. For example, when Gizmodo paid for a lost iPhone 4 prototype and started publishing stories about it, good old Steve Jobs tried to made legal threats, and the editor said, Brian Lamb said, "I'm going to go to jail." Fine, you know, you can threaten jail on me. I don't care. But things get even straighter. Yet another PlayStation 4 Slim was purchased and subsequently unboxed on a video by a UK freelance journalist named Laura Kate Dale. She even outright reviewed the console. She liked it, and her video is still up. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that Sony didn't threaten Eurogamer with legal action. More like we're going to threaten you with no ads. You know,
how are they buying these consoles if Sony hadn't released them yet?
Released them. I mean, but here they just broke street date. They sent the consoles to these brick and mortar, and some of them decided, screw it, we're going to sell them now. So I saw pictures of this PlayStation 4 Slim. It looks like it's half the size of the PlayStation 4. It's that small. It is black. It's black, not white.
Mm-hmm.
And the USB ports are rearranged, and so is the power and all that stuff. They're rearranged on the board. They're wider apart. And it looks exactly like a PS4, except tiny. So...
That sounds good.
Yeah, but here the thing is, this is not the Geo. This is the second... This is a different... So, essentially, what Sony is doing is that they're releasing a slimline PlayStation 4 and a 4K-enabled PS4, which I'm willing to bet you will be the same size as a regular PS4 right now. I mean, Microsoft did the same as doing that basically with the Microsoft Xbox One S, but they're holding off the Scorpio for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
I don't know. Like, do embargoes apply to consoles the way they apply to games?
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part. Well... See, when the Xbox 3 Slim was leaked, Microsoft just went with we don't comment on rumors, you know, which is basically their way of saying yeah, but we can't talk about it yet. There are embargoes, and you have to wonder about the. See, I think they bought it from a GameStop, but the problem with that is that GameStops are all individuals, right? You can't really. The other stores, it's not like all the GameStops did it, or all the Walmarts did it, just these one or two stores. You know, and the threat that my hardware manufacturers usually use on smaller, you know, brick and mortars is, you know, if you do this, we're going to be slower with you. We're going to treat you like shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they can do that. So, question, does a PlayStation 4 Slim appeal to you if it's tiny and black?
Is it are the specs exactly the same as the regular PlayStation 4?
I believe so. The funny thing about these people who are unboxing them, they didn't really check to see if there's 4K or anything. I just think it's a smaller PS4, and it's half the size, literally.
If that's the case, then no, because I already have a PS4.
Yeah, I think I've been going to wait for that PS4.5.
But you know what? Here's the thing. The Xbox One S, I mean, the only real thing that most people can get from it is HDR, right? That's the only real thing that they can get that they can't get with the Xbox One. It sold like hotcakes.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was a slow month for everybody, but still, I was not expecting the Xbox One S to sell out. And it isn't like Microsoft... you know, pulled a Wii in, which they just released a certain number. No, they released a lot, you know, and they just released, I believe, the 1 terabyte and 500 gigabyte editions of it too. So I'm pretty sure the PS4 Slim could sell. I mean, people like small form, you know, and if they're going to trade in their PS4 for a PS4 Slim,
yeah, I don't know, like. One other thing about this that's, like, interesting to me is everybody knew that a Slim was eventually going to come, but they hadn't even announced it yet, and people are already getting their hands on it. Were Sony just going to announce this and then sell it on the same day?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah. They're going to say, on September 7th, they're going to say, this is the PS4 Slim, and it's now available right now. Because I'm willing to bet you that the Neo isn't ready yet.
Hmm.
I think they're probably going to release the Neo in November or something like that, and they need something that's going to sell because they must have been planning this for a while. But I have to wonder when they intended to start selling the Slim. Did they just see the Xbox One S sell and say, you know what, we need to get some of that action?
Yeah, it's looking that way because. It seems odd that we knew about the Xbox One S for a good long while before it was released, but like the way this story is coming out, it seems as though they were going to drop it on the same day.
They did this with the PS3 Slim, so I guess it's just a repeating of their pattern.
Yeah, the thing is that this September 7th thing has been around for a while,
And most people assumed it was going to be the unveiling of the PlayStation Neo, which it still could be. They could be really, showing off both. But I'm not sure that they had intended to show off the PS4 Slim on September 7th. It's just they saw the Xbox One S getting a lot of traction and said, oh, crap, we can't allow that to happen. Let's unveil the PS4 Slim now, you know, and get it out now. I wonder when these were manufactured, you know, because that's another thing. Remember, the Xbox 360 was a buggy piece of crap, the launch 360, because they had to rush it out because their contracts with the chip makers for the original Xbox were coming to a halt, and they were going to have to hard cut the Xbox. And Microsoft said, oh, crap, we have to release something now, so let's release the Xbox 360 now. You know, the same thing, by the way, with the Commodore 64. I had a launch Commodore 64, and later I found out that it was manufactured with baling wire and electrical tape. You know, it was just a bunch of shit crammed together in one console, which is why one out of every three C64 was malfunctioning. So, the same story. So I'm wondering if the PS4 Slim is going to have the same issues.
I hope not.
Well, you know, I mean, when you're early adopter, that's the threat you have, you know?
Yeah.
I had an iPod, every single iPod, I think it was more than 50% of them just burned out immediately.
Funny, because my iPod that I've had for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or something now has been working just fine. It even has really good battery life, too.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the iPod, the first iPod. Mm-hmm. First, you know, it was like, oh, it was a disaster.
Yeah. I got in on, like, the generation immediately after the first generation of Xbox 360 releases.
Yeah.
And I still have that thing, and it still works.
I have my replacement. I had to replace it twice. Now, the third replacement is working just fine. As a matter of fact, it's the only way I can play Mass Effect right now. Thank you very much. You know, I hope they release the remastered thing this holiday. It's kind of torture for me now because it's so close and yet so far away.
Yeah, right?
You know, here's the thing. If it's remastered, I'm going to get all new achievements, you know? I mean, I have 60 of 62 achievements on the first Mass Effect, so I'm pretty sure that the remastered version is going to have new achievements, which is fine. I don't mind doubling up on stuff I already did. I just hope they don't do strange crap, you know? Actually, I wouldn't. Like, get an achievement for doing certain things that people did but wasn't achievement before. I don't know. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ. All
right. Rumor: Nintendo NX could be region-free from Polygon. Nintendo's next gaming system could lack region locking, allowing owners to buy and play games from any country, according to new reports. Let's Play Video Games cites sources with knowledge of the console, known only as NX for now, who say that early development kits can run software from any region. That would be a major, if small, change from Nintendo's earlier home consoles, Wii U, Wii, GameCube, and beyond. Wii U, Wii, GameCube, and beyond can only play games from their region of origin, meaning American gamers have had to miss out on games like Captain Rainbow, Disaster, Day of Crisis, and Doshin the Giant. These and other Nintendo-published titles skipped the US, but had Japanese and European launches. If the NX system can run any region's titles, it would allow for fans to import exclusive games that skipped their home countries. Prior to the Nintendo 3DS, Nintendo's handhelds have traditionally been region-free as well. That means imported copies of Mother 3 and freshly picked Tingle's Rosie Rupee Land are playable on any compatible hardware. The NX is rumored to be a portable system, and Let's Play Video Games' latest report says the dockable hardware could be slightly thicker than a Nintendo 3DS XL. That's with its expected detachable controllers attached. Still, Nintendo hasn't called it a successor to the 3DS, or Wii U for that matter.
Yeah. Oh god, you know, freshly picked Tingle's Rosie Rupee Land. The cover for that game is, yeah, let's just say it's a little campy. So I've never really done importing of games, although I do know that if Jordan were here, he'd say a silent prayer for Lixang. Poor Lixang. Because here's the thing. A lot of PS3 owners love that them imported games.
Yeah. This is also big for, well, not anymore because they've actually started bringing them over to the States, but like Dragon Warrior, that was Dragon Quest. Those games weren't coming stateside for long, long periods of time after they would already be released in Japan. And I know lots and lots of people that are huge fans of that series that always lamented.
And that is another Nintendo fail, by the way, but continue.
Yeah. And here's the thing, is that, you know, the Xbox One is region-free, and is the PS4 is region-free too, right? I'm not sure about that. But I know that the Xbox One player is DVD, is region-free. So maybe Nintendo is seeing, oh, wait, everybody else is doing region-free, we better get in on this region-free action, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to check to see if it is. They don't know. I'm looking at the question. They don't know. Oh, it is region free. Or that's according to Kotaku 3 years ago. Somebody tell me if the PlayStation 4 is region locked or not.
I'm looking. I haven't ever really noticed.
Well, let me look at here. Sony. The PS1 and the PS2 were region locked.
PS3 was.
PS3 was not region locked except for one.
No, it was region locked because you couldn't.
Games are not region-locked because most of them are distributed by Blu-ray or as digital.
Well, all I know is my friend who went from Florida to Portugal had to have two different Sony accounts, so I don't know.
So apparently the PlayStation 4 is not region-locked, but your accounts are regional.
That must be it right there. It was an account.
Yeah. So
that sucks.
I mean, I guess a disc you don't have to worry about, but if you're doing a digital game, then you have to worry. Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, so I know that Scott is a prospective NX purchaser, so I'm pretty sure he's happy to hear that it's region free.
Yes,
or it's going to be region free. Go ahead.
That is okay. Rumor, Nintendo NX...
No, not the next item. I'm just saying continue with your appraisal. Because here's the thing. You've been playing some JRPGs.
Oh, yeah, this is because it's going to be mobile, so that's probably part of the reason why it's region-free, or at least I imagine that's why it's region-free. People, you know, they're going to travel, and so they want to be able to play their games or purchase games wherever they are, so that would make sense to make it region-free, so that way it's... you know, it opens up more potential buying and more marketing, so that way you don't have somebody who's, you know, visiting another country from their wherever they came from and can't play or purchase games.
You know, I just realized I've never tried to buy any Japanese games on my cell phone. You know, any Japanese cell phone games, because I know they have a crap ton of them. They're all social networking type of fun little games like that. But I wonder if it's possible to, or if they or if the store is region locked.
I don't think so. Only because the App Store is a cavalcade of Korean titles, for one. there are a ton of different things on there from all sorts of different countries, and I can't imagine that the App Store is region locked, at least on the iPhone.
You know, that reminds me. I wish I had my Mass Effect 3 app back. I miss that. For whatever, I don't know why they did that, by the way. Why did EA take off the Mass Effect 3 app? Do you know that about that app? What happens is that when you were playing the game, on occasion the characters would send you messages on your cell.
I imagine it didn't get them enough money, so they just said...
It was a free app, though. It was never supposed to make money, you know?
I don't know.
Because you complained about the ending and they took it away from you as possible.
Yeah, there you go.
No.
Oh, screw you guys.
I mean, once Tally, after a mission, she... What's it called? She texted me, seriously, Shepard, spiders. Because she's afraid of... You know, and one...
some of them were like, I didn't do this one because I didn't romance Garrus, but once you get a text from Garrus saying that he watched you sleeping the other night and you looked beautiful, you know, and that sort of thing.
All right, creep, back off.
No, they're romanced. It's not. They're romanced. They're already romanced. I think it's after the sex scene too.
Okay.
You know, there's another one in which if you did the destroy ending and you had an IE EMS, you showed that Shepard survived, and you'd get this text a couple of days after you did that end. You'd say one of the characters, I think it was your love interest, would say they'd be meeting you in the hospital later. So yeah, I mean, there was a lot of neat stuff with that app, and I wish they would. Fortunately, I know there's a lot of wikis that that saved all the messages, but still, you have sort of a lack of spontaneity. So, anyways, Scott, why don't you take the next one?
Alrighty then, and that is the next one, or let's see.
No, the next one. Devs can now publish.
Okay. Devs can now publish Windows apps straight to Xbox One. This is from Engadget. Microsoft is getting its proverbial development ducks in a row with addition of new capabilities to its dev center that should make multi-platform publishing a whole lot more straightforward, as well as provide more feedback to developers. Microsoft's been working towards this point for some time and announced the plan in January last year, and even before that had selectively been porting Windows apps to the console. But this is the first time devs have been able to offer apps built using the Anniversary Update SDK directly to Xbox One owners. The Dev Center dashboard has also been overhauled, meaning it should be quicker and easier to edit apps, as well as bringing notifications and personalized suggestions. Ultimately, there are a whole load of new options aimed at giving developers more control over their apps and games across Windows and Xbox devices. These include the ability to only push an update to a small percentage of users or make updating mandatory, which would be handy, for example, a developer discovers a serious bug. Devs still need to get concept approval from Microsoft, though.
Yeah, that's kind of because you don't want a game full of penises or something like that.
This is a big thing, because back in the day, it was super hard to publish indie projects on Microsoft. Like, I remember reading an article that was like, it was the people that made Braid and a few other titles.
There was a lot of complaining.
Like, it wasn't just, like, pushing it, like, which was apparently a process in of itself dealing with Microsoft executives, but they would also charge the developer, like, an absurd amount of money to go in and apply a patch to the game. So this seems like a much more streamlined and much more open process. I really hope it works out for people.
That's ironic because right now Xbox LIG users are having real troubles right now. They say it's been basically shut down and only has one person helping them because of the move from XBLIG to ID at Xbox. So there's a single email address, and the woman who's there occasionally responds when she's allowed to. And they're running down now, and basically it's because, you know, the Xbox 360 is going away, you know, slowly going away. So, you know, XNA was a big problem for people, though. Yeah, you know. I'm more interested to see what the apps will be, you know, because there's a lot of Windows apps that are out there. It'd be interesting to see what they do on the Xbox One.
What was the thing before this that was sort of like this that Microsoft shut down? It had Conquer and all that stuff. No, it was they were allowing people to publish stuff like they.
That's XNA. You're thinking of XNA.
Is that what that Conquer thing was on when they were bringing Conquer back?
No, that's Project Spark.
Project Spark. That was the one that got shut down.
Yeah. I don't know. It's disappointing that Project Spark got shut down, by the way, because, you know, even though, you know, I guess I was part of the problem because I never used it. I downloaded it but never used it. I wonder what happens if I try to open it now.
Probably get an error saying servers are closed or something.
Yeah.
Cannot connect.
But let's face it, now that it's no longer a stigma, Microsoft is turning their Xbox line into console PCs. Because everybody else is now trying to make their stuff more of console PCs. So Microsoft says, yes,
we have an edge here because we actually have the popular OS to mate our console with. You know, who gives a shit about Linux? As a matter of fact, Sony putting Linux on the PS3 is what started all their problems. Because of the other OS issues and the hacks and all that stuff. You know, you don't want to put a hacker OS on your console. Just a little bit of advice, Sony.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fun news. Like I said, I'm more interested to see what the apps are going to be like more than the games. And, you know, I still want an XBLA. I still want Xbox Live Arcade, you know, and with its own section. Because here's the thing, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, everybody was excited about Wednesdays. Wednesdays was when they had the new XBLA game, and it was sort of like, oh, yeah, what's going to be this time, you know? And it got
Summer
to that point. The Summer of Arcade,
Summer.
You know, and it's like...
What's great?
You know, oh, Bastion, that sounds interesting. You know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Braid, that sounds interesting. Oh, Penny Arcade Adventures, that sounded... Remember the kerfuffle when you gasp had to pay $20 for Penny Arcade Adventures? Oh my god. Mm-hmm. It was such a horrendous thing. You know, maybe it was the opticals. Maybe they didn't like paying 1,600 Microsoft points.
Yeah.
What are you? You can't afford a $20 game? It's not like you're buying Ms. Pac-Man. Anyway. The last news item, which goes beyond what Alpha was... Alpha. That's Scott. Alpha Shard.
Yeah.
What Alpha Shard was talking about earlier. PS4 mods not broken, but Sony hasn't pushed it live yet. And this comes from Express UK. Fallout 4 developer Bethesda has responded to complaints about Fallout 4 mods on PS4 and the delay of the launch of Nuka World DLC on Sony's platform. PS4 users are eagerly awaiting... PS4 users are eagerly awaiting the launch of the Fallout 4 mods, and we're disappointed to find that the long-awaited Nuka World DLC didn't go live when advertised. One fan argued that Bethesda didn't care about its fans because the mods haven't been released yet, and the DLC was broken. Marketing boss good old Pete Hines responded to the fans, tweeting, "It's not broken. They haven't pushed it out, pushed it live yet." And by they, I'm pretty sure they mean Sony. He continued to say, "We don't control other people's platforms. We give the time, but we aren't pushing the buttons." Nuka World eventually made its debut in the PlayStation Store with Bethesda support telling season pass holders to stay more tuned for more information. And that's one genuine gripe that you might have is that you told season pass holders they already paid you the money, and you told them when it's supposed to come out. You know. Unfortunately, Bethesda, you know, I don't know, I think Bethesda and Sony did not communicate here, and they were supposed to get it at the same time Xbox One and PC owners were supposed to get it.
Yeah.
And we heard Scott raving about the Nuka World DLC earlier in this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, Sony's having trouble pushing out their content, so it makes sense that Microsoft is getting their ducks in a row.
It makes no sense to me anymore why the mods haven't been pushed on PS4 yet. Because, like, at first I thought maybe they're sitting back and seeing how the Xbox thing goes because console mods are a new frontier.
Yeah, and remember, Skyrim mods are going to be following.
Yeah, and so I thought they were just sitting back and waiting to see what happens, but Xbox Fallout 4 mods have been out for a while now, and they still haven't pushed the button on that, and I don't understand. Like, what's the holdup here?
I guess they don't like Sony.
That's the conspiracy theory, Scott. Yeah, Bethesda doesn't like money.
Sony hates its fans.
Yeah, Sony doesn't want fans, they just want the money. They're all money-grubbing evil people. Well, actually, after this entire, you know, film kerfuffle, I'm not going to get into it. I'm starting to think that. I don't know. Like I said, this is a lack of communication, and it sounds like a technical issue, but I don't know. I haven't been following mods, and if the Xbox One mods for Fallout 4 have been around... and PS4 haven't been getting it. It seems the optics seem weird.
Quite frankly, I think, you know, PIs, no one cares for your bullshit excuses and finger pointing. Just make the calls and get it done.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't popped in Fallout 4 to check out the mods. Maybe I'll do that, because, like I said, I haven't returned to Fallout 4 since I, quote-unquote, since I basically ended the storyline. You know, I didn't do the season pass, so I had no reason to check out the new DLC. I expect that I'll be able to get all the DLC at some point for $20.
Yeah. You could probably wait for that, but I do think Bar Harbor and this Nuka World are worth it there, at least. You know, additions to the world that you can explore. The other stuff is just workshop additions. So if you're not really into whole building and stuff, then I wouldn't get those. But if you want to do explore a new part of the world, Far Harbor and Nuka World are definitely worth it.
You know, I never played a lot of the Fallout 3 DLC until I got the Game of the Year edition. So, like I said, it's not a priority for me. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'll have fun exploring those new areas. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, the fact that you had a ton of choices of who to back during the main campaign, I just feel like I made the right choices, and I just don't want to do the single-player campaign again, so I'd probably just start off from there and do the other stuff, you know, the DLC from there, rather than play over again.
Yeah, you don't have to play over again. I'm not.
I didn't say that. I'm just saying, you know, like with the Fallout 3, I played that over and over again. I enjoyed that, you know. For some reason, Fallout 4, I really have no interest in playing it over again.
I'm in the same boat as you. I'm also kind of spoiled by CD Projekt Red. CD Projekt Red has the right idea with their DLC. They have a button, like, they have a menu option right at the beginning that basically says, do you want to go off of one of your saves? You want to play the regular games regular, or do you want to basically just start at a certain level and jump right into the DLC?
Baldur's Gate does that.
And
but
that,
I don't know if it's... Go ahead.
That is a wonderful time saver, and I don't know why more people don't do that.
See, the thing is...
Baldur's Gate does.
Well, here's the thing. Mass Effect doesn't do that, but I still enjoy playing through. You know, and that has a lot of decisions to make. I just, you know, the structure of Fallout 4... You know, I don't know. Maybe it's the fact it's an open world, and I'm just burned out in open worlds. I mean, I started playing Deus Ex: Mankind Divided, and one of the problems I had was, oh, it's sort of openish, worldish. You know, and Deus Ex, the original Deus Ex, had wide open levels that you could do a lot of crap in, but it wasn't an open world. It was just a massive level. You know, I don't know. Like I said, go ahead.
I do like that in the Nuka world that you get to really honestly choose between helping, doing the raiders or killing the raiders, and not just because in Skyrim it felt like it was very one sided, you know. Uh-huh. They didn't really give you a quest to you know, take out like the Brotherhood, the assassins. You just kill them, and then I don't know. It just wasn't satisfying, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit better in Fallout 4.
Scott doesn't get satisfied. News at 11.
Well, you know, I mean, the one of the characters in Skyrim, there's this character, it's the last snow elf in the world, I guess, or at least in Skyrim, and he's a freaking paladin. And, you know, it's like, I want to be that guy. That's the guy I want to be. Why can't I be him? But it's like, no, you can't.
I thought your mission, you were about to say your mission was to kill the last snow elf in the world.
See, exactly. That's what that game would do. Skyrim would be like, oh, you want to go kill him? Like one of the Daedra princes would probably tell you to go kill him or something. And meanwhile, you see, it's like there's no divine quest, you know, not really. There's like some side thing, but not. It's not like the same with the Daedric princes, where you get a treasure of an artifact of theirs, and you swear your soul to each one of them, which just really sounds ridiculous. You think they would say, "Wait, you already swore to him, so you can't swear to me." It's just like it just made no sense.
You know, the funny thing is that from what I hear from other people in Deus Ex: Mankind Divided, I think I mentioned this, is that everything you do, people notice. So when I get back into Deus Ex: Mankind Divided, I'm going to enjoy seeing what they notice, you know? And I like games like that. Mass Effect does that, you know. From what I understand, The Witcher does that too. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I'll probably just get Two Worlds Part 3 or something. I don't know. Anyway, we did have listener feedback. Take it away, TJ.
Alrighty. From Donovan. I read that Civ 6 will use DX12, so it might help low-tier PCs, as the low-level API reduces overhead, and it could be coded for async to accommodate AMD, GCN, and NVIDIA Pascal GPUs via concurrency to gain more performance. That was a lot of...
Yeah, you also roboted out there. Why don't you do it again? No, I'm not gonna let you do it again. You did robot, but I'm not gonna force you to do it again. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans at gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. The question of the week this week, which I made up on the fly, is what is your favorite gaming fan convention?
Not necessarily
video game. It can just be genre, like Star Trek and stuff like that.
I did want to reply a little bit to Donovan because I'm glad he's writing in. I think this is like the third time he's written in a row, and it's really good to have our listeners write in. I do hope that Civ 6 isn't too demanding. I believe it won't be from what I've seen.
It's a strategy game. It better not be. It's a turn-based, tile-based strategy game. It better not be, right? You know. I mean, there should be an option in these games to have just a regular grid.
Yeah,
and
you could
nothing
lower, you could just play strategic mode.
You know, make it look like Civilization 1.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take it easy.
Okay, and I am exiting the thing, and that should be it. Okay, see you later.
All right, bye.
Later.
Hey, Cortana, unmute.